Hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Liberty's leave policy was tremendous. Having the ability to take 16 weeks off, fully paid to bond with my child, was an incredible experience.
At Liberty Mutual, you can find a career that supports you at every step, even baby steps. We offer up to 16 weeks parental leave for new moms and dads. And because not everyone's pathway to parenthood looks the same, we offer robust fertility, surrogacy, and adoption benefits too. Learn more at libertymutualcareers.com and pursue your tomorrow today.
Hello and welcome to the Home Medicine Podcast. My name's Phil. Joining us as usual, I've got Rohan. Rohan, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. As usual, this episode of the Home Medicine Podcast is sponsored by Home Medicine Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Medicine instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Medicine and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. Rohan, Toba is here. Home Assistant 2023.10 is here.
Yes.
But before we can catch up on all that, we have things to catch up from last month that sort of came out. So Home Assistant turned 10 in September, and as part of that, a few things came out. So we've got a new bit of hardware. We've got the Home Assistant Green was announced. I think this is like the answer to the like Raspberry Pi issues, you know, that are currently going on in terms of, you know, if you just want to buy a Raspberry Pi, you can't. It's really hard to do at the moment. They've got the Home Assistant Green. It's a 1.0 gigahertz quad core ARM processor, little self-contained unit. It's got 4 gig of RAM with 32 gig of eMMC storage, so no SD cards to worry about. A little bit of storage there, 32 gigs. I don't know. Do you reckon, I mean, for what Home Assistant is, it's more than enough, but I think once you start adding add-ons and all that, you might run out of room fairly quickly. But, you know, I guess, so yeah, the Home Assistant Green, it's being positioned as your entry into Home Assistant. This isn't meant to like if you've already been using Home Assistant for a few years and you've got a nice server at home, like Rohan's got, you know, his server room back there. This isn't the device for you. But, you know, if you are trying to get started with Home Assistant, or maybe you want to get a friend or someone involved in Home Assistant, give them a little Christmas present, a little, I don't know if you have Santa sacks where you are, Rohan. You know, we call them stocking stuffers. There's little presents, mini presents. This might be one for you. I think it's $99 US.
It's priced basically $100, which is a good. I mean, I don't know if that's a stocking stuffer present or like a present, right? But like, yeah,
depends,
I mean,
how much if you like the person or not, right?
Yeah, how much you like them, right? But you know, even. Like if you want to have a little box at your parents' place for, you know, getting them some home automation stuff, things like that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. And Phil, you kind of touched on a little bit, right? Where you don't, it's not based on the Raspberry Pi. It's actually their own hardware. So, unlike the Yellow, which is, I mean, it relies on the compute module or CM4, for the actual device. for the brains of the device. This does not. So meaning hopefully it's not subject to those same kind of supply chain problems that Raspberry Pi has been having forever. So yeah, that's what might be nice here.
Yeah, certainly hope so. But yeah, I think we are very lucky. Nebuchadnezzar is sending Rohan and I a couple of units. I think they're going to arrive just a couple of days after we're recording this today. So
yeah,
always away time-wise. I would have loved to hold one up for everyone here that's watching on YouTube. But yeah, I do think it's a great little bit of hardware, you know, to get home. This isn't out to people. I think it's competitively priced at $99, you know. Yeah. It doesn't have Wi-Fi in it, and I think Paulus did describe that as an intentional decision, you know, that, you know, the backbone of your smart home should be Ethernet, not Wi-Fi.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree with him entirely there. I think mm-hmm. I think Wi-Fi is reliable enough that you know, the fallacy is no longer necessarily true, but for this one specific thing, I think that there may be some value there, especially if you're doing things like pulling stuff from a NAS or something like that.
Yeah,
just gives a little bit of quality in that sense, right? Not that Wi-Fi these days is slow by any means. So, but yeah, I agree.
The biggest selling point for me for this device, and something that I really appreciate Home Assistant doing, and it's part of, you know, their whole sustainability and trying to reduce, mm-hmm. you know, waste in the smart home space. If you decide that you no longer need Home Assistant to run on this device, there is actually, I think it's an SD card port that you can plug new firmware into it. So I think you can just plug your whole new wipe Home Assistant yeah. completely from the device, and it becomes completely yours. You have full access to it, so you can, you know, run Linux on it, use it as another server for something around your home. So I really appreciate
it. Yeah, and it's just an ARM processor, right? So it's not like you yep. need something crazy on it, whatever, just any OS that supports ARM. If you can put it on a Raspberry Pi, basically, you can kind of use it on here, right? So
yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's great. So yeah, I think it's already available online. So homeassistant.io, you can order that. Get it in time for Christmas if you want it.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts you got on it, Rohan?
No, I mean, I think it's pretty cool. Again, like I said, or I guess you said it, like it's more of a new entry-level device, right? So for myself, I could see myself using the yellow more than I could see myself using the green.
Yep.
Which again, a little more customizable, has a little more punch behind it, right, from a power perspective. But the a couple other things to note too is the green doesn't have, unlike the yellow, which has like a Zigbee Thread radio built into it. It's basically got a Sky Connect, but Home Assistant Sky Connect built into it. This does not, right? So this would require an external, like something like a Sky Connect, or even if yeah. you use Conbi stick or something like that. You'd plug it into this device, right? So, but you know what? I think for the price point, if I was to buy a dedicated Raspberry Pi for this over this, I think for the bit of a premium, I think I would probably pick this. Mm-hmm. And it's just way easier to find as well, right? So, yep.
And I think, Sky Connect's only $29 as well. So what, you're 130 in for yeah. a Zigbee and Home Assistant dedicated box. It's pretty, like, I think that's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And listen, it's not like if you already have a Pi or whatever, it's not like Home Assistant's dropping support on those devices, right? It's
yep.
that's still going to be supported. This is just added to that lineup, right? And I think, you know, there's a bit of confusion there. Like, even if you look at the FAQs, I was looking at it last night, and it's exactly the same thing, right? It's like, we are not dropping support for the Raspberry Pi, right? there's no need to revolt. Like, it is, and look, the Pi is at a price point, you know, which is obviously lower than this, but this includes a little bit more, right? So I think it's just a trade-off there. And it comes built in, so you don't have to sit there and image your SD card and do all of that stuff. If, again, especially if it's like for somebody not super technical or it's somebody's first time getting into home automation, this is a great.
Like if you're time poor, like I've come to starting to really appreciate things that are just already done for me, right? Like, so being able to buy a device that's got Home Assistant OS, I just plug it in essentially and Home Assistant OS turns on.
Yeah.
I love it. And with the new onboarding stuff that was introduced in 2023.9, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So on that too, I mean, we're talked about, you know, where this differs from the Raspberry Pi 4 and stuff. We also got an announcement today about, or not today, I guess yesterday I heard, as at the time of recording, for the Raspberry Pi 5, right? So, you know, there's they're accepting pre-orders on a ton of sites, stuff like that. They're saying it's shipping end worldwide by end of October. Looks like it's going to be a pretty decent spin of the Raspberry Pi family there. So it looks like it's getting a 2.4 gigahertz quad core 64-bit ARM Cortex A76 CPU. Nice. Yeah, I know that they actually made the chips themselves. Like they designed the chips themselves or things like that, right? Which is really nice. It's got a HEVC decoder in there. I think it had it before as well. I know it did. It did H.264. I didn't know if it did 265 or not. But one thing that looks kind of lackluster is the dual band 802.11 AC Wi-Fi. I don't know. As someone in technology,
I was just about to say, here comes the networking guy.
It's there's newer standards out there, but they did look at. I think they upgraded the network ports on there too. So I saw on something saying that there's a 10 gig Ethernet port coming, but I'm looking at their announcement right now on raspberrypi.com and it says that it's gigabit Ethernet with PoE plus support, which requires a PoE plus hat. I feel like that's wrong, but maybe I'm wrong there. And
because there is a new hat coming out in 2024 to do PoE support, I believe.
Yeah, which would make sense. I mean, there's always been a hat for PoE. It's just it required that extra hardware, which is outside of the device itself, right? But yeah, that's I don't know. That's a pretty cool. And again, I think they're going to have 4 gig and 8 gig variants.
Yep.
Somebody on a chat somewhere was saying that hey, they heard that there's going to be a 16 gig variant too. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. That potentially might be.
I mean, it's already pretty pricey, though. Like, it's no longer a $30 Raspberry Pi, right?
No, it's 60 and 80, right?
Yeah.
So 60 for the 4 gig, 80 for the 8 gig. I mean, if they come up with the 16 gig, maybe that'll be 100? I don't know. Right, but...
I think today, if you're looking for a Raspberry, like a Home Assistant box, you know, would you go a Raspberry Pi 4 or wait for the 5? I think you would get the 4 if you would... I don't think 5 is a big enough upgrade.
I think there is some value there. Because I think you're just in a couple of intro like YouTube videos I was watching last night. They're saying that it is far more powerful. Like you can, so to me, you can run more containers on it. You can do a lot more things like that. And again, I think right now the RAM might be a limitation there. Right. Not that if you're running like a supervised home assistant install or like the OS on there, I think it is pretty efficient and stuff like that. But depending on what else you're throwing at it, that could fill up pretty quickly. Right. So personally, I think if I was to get the 5, I think I'd do the 8 gig variant right now. Because then I can run a bunch of stuff on it and just have it all contained to that one little box rather than having to buy multiple pies now and this service here, that service there, that kind of thing. It's just, at least for my home automation stuff, right? I think that's what I would. But comparing it with the green, right? I mean, processor-wise, the Pi 5 is better and so on. But I don't know. I feel like... The green is a listen. The green's available, right? And that's a big difference. Pi 4 is not. again, I've pre-ordered my yellow, which again, like I said, relies on the compute module. I've pre-ordered that, I think in February or March of this year, and it still hasn't, like, it's gotten kicked out a couple of times. It's supposed to be in August. Then it's supposed to be, it was supposed to be, I think, beginning of this month, so September. Now I'm seeing end of October. I'm hoping it comes in at that point, but I don't think it's anything other than just the availability of the I compute modules. Right. So I don't know how the 5 is going to be. But I have been told if you want it, go pre-order it right now. There's a variety of sites selling it. I don't know.
Yeah. I actually saw a site list it before they even announced it. So,
oh really?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's just more than one, but I didn't catch it. But that's,
so there you go.
Yeah.
Now you may be looking around, and this is true in the 2023.10 release. The Home Assistant logo looks a little bit different. So as part of the 10-year birthday, Home Assistant did launch a new logo. So that's now live on Discord, in the Home Assistant website. I did notice I think it's been fixed, but I don't know. Someone pointed out to me that when they updated the Discord logo, it was off center, and it was like really, once I had noticed that, it was like really bugging me. I'm like, oh, it's not. Really? Yeah. Like,
no, I don't know. No, just, I'm going to look.
It looked off. I think they've fixed it now, or at least I look at
on
it
my
now.
On my phone, it looks okay, but. Yeah.
I think they must have fixed it. It looked a bit like just not centered. I was like, oh, OCD is really kicking in there.
Somebody that just to like annoy 90% of the people.
100%, right? It's like a 5-pixel difference, and they're like, yeah, I've done this.
Yeah. Let's see how many toes I can step on right now, right? It's
that's it. So that logo is slowly rolling out. I think they're going to put it out on their channels. And they've also got it coming in the 2023.10 release. I think once you log in, probably in your title bar as well, you'll see the new logo around. So yeah, watch out for that one.
Yeah, it looks kind of slick. I like it. Also, You're the Voice Chapter 4 is coming. It's funny because when we were on the creators call, Phil, you and I joined separate ones, but the one I was on during the day, Paul has mentioned that he was like, you know, it's been a bit of a while since we've had a Chapter 3 update. In my head, I was like, really? I feel like Chapter 3 was like 3 weeks ago. I don't know. Maybe in my head, I'm like, wow, these guys are like going super fast. But October 12th will be a live stream event talking about Hear the Voice Chapter 4. As we've discussed, I mean, this has been a priority for the Napucasa team, as well as the, you know, the home assistant core development folks, and Michael Hansen, who we've had on the show in the past, right? And if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's actually really good. Good episode where Mike talks quite a bit about what their you know, longer term plan is and where they're trying to get to with a lot of this stuff. So I think it's pretty neat. We'll leave it there. Don't want to ruin any surprises. I think you know, October 12th is going to be when that event is. I haven't seen anything at the time of recording. I haven't seen anything on their site with just about it yet. But I did get permission to say, hey, we're gonna. This is when the date is.
It's coming October 12th. But yeah, there will be announcements their usual time. So morning for me in Australia, like ridiculous time. But I think afternoon, sometime that'll work well for Europe and the US. So that's fine.
Yeah.
All right. So 2023.10 is here.
Yeah.
Let's break that down. So first of all, there's new tile features available for the climate and select entities. So in your dashboard view, there's now new buttons you can add for these entity types, so climate and select entities. So select entities, you can now actually have a drop-down show right on your dashboard, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And for climate, there's a whole bunch of little buttons that you can add against the card. So rather than having to click a card and then bring up the more info dialogue, for example, if you want to turn, you know, maybe the oscillation of a fan off or on, if your climate device supports that, or if you want to set the mode, you can basically customize all these different buttons that can be there. So that's a cool little feature there.
Yeah, I actually want to update mine with that one. I'm using some custom card right now, which I do like, but I actually really like the default file in there, so that's pretty good. What else is going on in this release? Map entity markers. So now you can customize a lot of the entity markers that come on the map. So maybe, like, for example, instead of like maybe my initials, maybe I'm going to say, hey, you know what? I want to know the charge state of my car, because that could be an entity in the map, right? So instead of that, give me like a numeric value that says, like, I don't know, it's 80%, right? Battery, whatever that is. So you can customize it to those things and then hide some entity markers on the map as well. So I don't know, I think it's pretty nice.
One cool use case I did see for that on our creators call was if you have a location for a petrol or gas station, you know the price of what the gas is at that time, ooh, on your map in Home Assistant, nice. You could display, you know, okay, the petrol at this place is, you know, $2 a litre, and over here it's $1.98. And that way, I guess, in your automations, you could decide, okay, let's drive to the one that's got the cheapest, which you could already do without this map update. But being able to just visualize, you know, or maybe on your commute to work, you know, where's the best place to stop off and get petrol that can save me some money.
Yeah, I really like that. That's actually a really, really good use case. There's a lot of apps that feed that kind of information too, right? Like in Canada, we have one called Gas Buddy that basically
you just have to scrape their API or data, website. Right?
Yeah. I wonder if there might be a native integration. I haven't seen one, but maybe there is. But that's actually pretty cool. That's what happens when you show up 30 minutes late to the creators' calls. You miss cool stuff like that. That's why I shouldn't do that.
That's it.
Password managers. If you're like me and you utilize a password manager, and you really should from a security perspective, you should now have more of an ability to use that to log into Home Assistant. So in the past, I don't know what it is. Maybe this is fields, the way the fields were built or something like that. Didn't allow for password managers to properly populate those values, like your username and password, those kind of things. Now we can. So there you go. You should use a password manager. Please start using one. If you don't already, please don't use the password, etc.
I don't know what it is, but I've used Bitwarden and I've never had an issue with the password not filling on the login screen. So maybe the Bitwarden is just better password manager than whatever is out there, or...
Yeah, I mean, it's a free open source one, right? So there's a lot of people that might be contributing. I don't know. Yeah.
All right. So there's new image fit modes that are coming to Home Assistant. So right now, if you've got an image card on your dashboard, it will try and display the image as best it can in that little box, right? So I think the current way... current terminology it's used for is called cover, which is defined as the image keeps its aspect ratio and fills the given dimensions. The image will be clipped so it can fit into that box. There's new options now becoming available. One of those is, for example, called contain, which is defined as the image keeps the aspect ratio, but is resized to fit within the given dimension, so no clipping occurs. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a whole other bunch of rules that you can select from. So this is cool if you've got, you know, a camera in a certain aspect ratio, but your dashboard is different and you don't want clipping to occur or anything like that. So just adding a few little tweaks there to how you can display things on your dashboard.
HomeKit receivers. So now the HomeKit integration now supports media player receivers, which has, I think, been anticipated for quite a while. So it basically expects the receivers to be paired in an accessory mode, and then those receivers that were paired in bridge mode, you should have to re-add. You will have to re-add them in accessory mode, but there'll be documentation around that. And
Rainbird now gets the calendar integration. So if you have a Rainbird irrigation controller linked with Home Assistant, it can now display your irrigation schedule on the Home Assistant internal calendar, which is quite nice, actually.
Mm-hmm. And Life 360, so there's a new button entity that you can use to manually pull location updates. So let's say, you know, whoever you have on Life 360 is somewhere else and you haven't, you know, you're wondering where they are, you can click it and it'll pull an update of their location, which is...
And because it's a button, you can also automate against that, right? So if your phone joins a certain Wi-Fi network, you could then fire off a automation to say, hey, push this button in Home Assistant to then pull the updates, so...
Yeah, exactly. Was it you that uses it, Phil? I know that I've had a few people on here that use Life 360. I don't, but...
No, I think it's a subscription model. So I've tried to avoid that. And I think, I don't know what the appeal is. I think for me, but if Life 360 is just to see where people are, the Home Assistant app in itself does that, right? Like I can see where my wife is, where I am, based on a map in Home Assistant, right? So I don't need another tracking app to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it has other stuff too. Like I thought it had like safety stuff or something like that. But
yeah, which might be a selling point for like, if you've got kids and stuff. Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. All right, new integrations. Apple WeatherKit is here. So now you can track the weather using Apple's WeatherKit API. Now, for those playing along at home, the WeatherKit API is actually Apple's replacement for the Dark Sky API. Dark Sky API, which was free, now costs a Apple developer's license, which is about $99 a month, I believe, US. So if you are paying $99 a month to Apple for a dev license, you know, maybe you're an iOS developer or something, you can now access Apple WeatherKit with Home Assistant.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're paying it already for other stuff, then great.
Yeah.
I don't know that weather information is worth $100 a month.
I think it's $100 a year. Probably,
but or $100 a year, whatever. I wouldn't pay $100 for weather information, maybe. I don't know. EcoForest. If you have an EcoForest fireplace, you can now monitor and control said fireplace. There you
go. EcoForest fire. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's not the best name for a fireplace as naming it forest, especially as half of our forests are like burning at any given time. So
yeah.
But that's just me.
No, but not being a depressing podcast. This is a fun podcast.
I know, right? I don't know how we got here.
I apologize. Right. IKEA Artisan Desk. You can now connect and control the height of your Kia Artisan motorized desk. I'm assuming this is native in Home Assistant because I'm already controlling my desk via ESP Home. So this must be via Bluetooth integration. I'm guessing you're doing the exact same with your desk.
I haven't because I have an app. It's like a third party app on my on my Mac that I use to control it. But I've been waiting for this, honestly, just because all of my ESP homes right now I'm using for, and I just didn't want to add extra code on there, weigh it down, that kind of thing, right? So I've kind of been holding out for the BLE functionality natively in ESP Home through Bluetooth proxy. So I've been anxiously waiting for this one. I'm pretty excited because my big thing is I do have one of those desks, and Phil, I think you do as well.
Yeah.
I always forget to stand. So it's literally, it's not a sit stand desk. It's just a sit desk at this point. it's a convenient, height adjustable sitting desk. So my plan is, actually have it so that it automatically goes up and down and I can tie that to, to my WebEx account, just make sure I'm not on a call. So it's not like I'm not on video and I'm just like all of a sudden like, hey, like trying to like get up or whatever while I'm on a call presenting to somebody. But so that's what I'm kind of hoping to do out of it and just get me to stand more, which is something I've been trying to do, but I genuinely just forget that I have a sit stand desk
because
discreet enough that the little paddle that comes with it is just far enough away that I'm not looking at it, right? So
I can
excited for that one.
see that. So I'm only using my ESP32 device. I've only got the one, and I'm only using it for this desk. So now that this is
here... Wait, are you not doing BA proxy?
No. I'm just running, like, yeah, I think it uses MQTT, like it introduces the desk as a cover into Home Assistant. So I think now I'm going to put the proxy onto that device and push it over to Home Assistant as a native integration this way. That's my mission. Yeah.
For some reason, cool. I thought you were using the Bluetooth proxy for a bunch of stuff, but maybe I just made that up.
I mean, I used to have like a whole bunch of Bluetooth blinds, but now I've moved those over to Zigbee. I'm really excited now to actually replace this ESP32, like that's currently running the IKEA stuff, move it over to proxy and just see what other crap comes into Home Assistant now.
Well, one thing I realized is like, so for my blinds, I got the SwitchBot tilts that are just next to me here.
Yep.
And those are, it needed to be active. The Bluetooth proxy mode needed to be active. So it actually builds a connection to it so it can run commands and stuff like that. And when I did that, I started getting device trackers from everybody that's like walking around. So I actually had to ignore a bunch of those. And even from my own home, right? Like just random devices that are spewing out BLE beacons that I didn't care to track as a device tracker. That was the big that was the interesting thing for me, being like, oh, okay, all of this stuff is just here, right?
Speaking of trackers, this might be a good segue to skip one here. I'm just going to go and talk about the private BLE device support is now available here. And this is probably, if this is going to be like the highlight of the release, I think this is it. So we can now track BLE devices that change their MAC address. So think of iPhone, think of Apple Watch. Home Assistant can now know what those random MAC addresses that those devices generate belongs to a single Apple device. Now, it does require you to go into Apple settings and find the algorithm or the unique way that it's generating these random MAC addresses and tell Home Assistant what that is. But once you do that, every time your iPhone or Apple Watch changes its MAC address and Home Assistant sees that MAC address out there in Bluetooth land, it will then marry that up against that hash and go, hey, this random MAC address actually belongs to this iPhone, so Rohan is home.
I didn't actually know that you could get that key, right? Like the seed key.
It'll be available in the Home Assistant docs on how to do it. But yeah, it's there. So it's locked away. Obviously, you know, you're just going to give it to anyone because that would defeat the purpose of what that whole random MAC address is doing. But yeah, use cases like the home, right? I think a lot of people have been like, oh, I wish I could use my watch to do this, or I know there was previously an app you would download on your iOS device that would instead mimic, you know, your Bluetooth tracking around for one of the presence things. But this, you know, no extra battery drain, just iPhone doing what it's doing already, and Home Assistant can work it out.
Yeah. I mean, if I can have it natively in there and I can avoid having an extra app and those kind of things, then that's beautiful, right? And the nice thing is, because Home Assistant isn't like this public whatever service, right? It's not like you're putting that seed key into some random website or something. It's in your house. It's you know, that kind of thing, right? It's local. And so that's good.
Then you've got multiple proxies around the house. You can, if you're in the bedroom or if you're in the kitchen, as long as your watch is sending, you know, a location to say you're here, then you can have presence.
Speaking of Bluetooth, Medcom, they make some radiation monitors that you can now add in through Bluetooth.
And the SwitchBot Cloud is now here. So you can now control SwitchBot devices using the SwitchBot Cloud API. I think we were discussing this in the creators call, SwitchBot, you know, you've got local, we've got Bluetooth support, there's now cloud support. I think they've got another local API support. So yeah, just depends on your flavor on how you want to run Home Assistant, right? So run SwitchBot. So
SwitchBot.
There you go.
Well, I think part of it too is sometimes the support is on the cloud piece first before it's on the local BLE piece, right? Just because Home Assistant might, or whoever's developing that functionality within Home Assistant just might not have gotten around to it yet, or they're waiting on some data or something like that, right? So this gives you a little bit of a stopgap if you need to as well, which is nice. Weatherflow. So you can now integrate your Weatherflow Tempest weather system. So bring in some of that weather goodness into your Home Assistant.
Breaking changes.
I was going to say, and then that way you don't have to get your WeatherKit API for $100 a year or whatever it is.
It's true.
Be your own API.
Well, just get one that broadcasts locally and sniff it right with a 433. Megahertz, or even what do we have? Someone else on this podcast spoke about this. Just be a pro tip and just buy one of those 433 megahertz sniffers because your neighbor's probably got one anyway, and just use their weather data for free.
So, fun fact: I did that. Apparently, nobody around me has one. But what you do is you pay $10 or whatever. You buy one of those guys and convince one of your neighbors to get it, and then that's really helpful. And then,
so on that, were you able to get things like tire pressure and all that from your car?
No, it's I don't know if it's just my radio or whatever. I could see a couple of random things, but nothing that was like, because my original intention was to actually we had somebody mail in and say, and they live in my region, right? So same water municipality that's delivering water and everything. Yep. So they were like, hey, I use this radio and I was able to get some water information off of my water meter to figure out my usage and things like that. And right now we have this ancient method of doing it, which is you have to actually dial in and you have to punch in your 16-digit code or whatever. And then what happens? And then, you punch in your 6-digit reading and whatever. Right. So it's all self-determined. And I actually used to work there at some point in my life. So I know that just by policy, they have to come out. They'll have to come out and check every 6 months or something like that.
Yeah.
So just to make sure you're not fraudulently doing anything. So they have to do their own verification or 1 year or something like that. So I just let them estimate for the entire time and then let them come and tap it. And it's you'll be up a couple of bucks, down a couple of bucks, whatever, right? It all evens out. As long as if I ever move from here, that final reading I need to do myself just to make sure I'm not losing money or whatever. Didn't work. I guess I have an older water meter. They did come by for a replacement, but their schedules never worked, so I never got the newer one. So
nice. Yeah.
So right now I can't read my water meter and I just have a 433 megahertz radio that just sits there. So and nobody has a weather station, so
yeah. So zero use.
Rant over. I tried.
Cool. So breaking changes in 2023.10. Z-Wave obviously requires a version bump. So yeah, if you're running Z-Wave.js, make sure you upgrade the container. Home Assistant OS should do the upgrade for you. But yeah, any other flavors, you just need to make sure you're running that latest version.
Neat. Backup names. So if you're on a supervised version of Home Assistant, so the default names given that backups are created are hasio.fullbackup and hasio.partial_backup. So it's no longer the UTC date and the time the backup was initiated, but instead it's going to use a local time end date that the backup was initiated. So if you're reliant on those, there will be a bit of discrepancy between your while a version change happens. So there might be a bit of an overlap or a bit of a gap depending on where in the world you are between UTC and your local time. But just make note of that.
Everyone, it is we're 10 release episodes into the year, and I don't think we've ever had to play this year. And I thought we were going to have a year of without needing to play this.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But here
Philips
comes.
Hue, man, here it comes. Um, cloud strikes again. Philips Hue has sent out or is sending out updates via the app to say that moving forward, you will require a Philips Hue account to use the Philips Hue Hub. Now, this is annoying. Now, it's annoying not only because, one, like, why should I need to give you my data, right? Why should I need to give you my email address to use your hardware that I've been able to use for years without doing it? But two, the reason that they are claiming that you need to do this is for security, which to me makes zero sense, right? Like, it is more secure for me to use my lights in my home without needing to give my email address to you when you have a breach of security and then my details get exposed. Like, how many data breaches does it take for companies to realize, like, the more data you have on people, like, the more we just get opened up to all these security breaches, right? So, yeah, that's rolling out. It's going to be a requirement. The good thing is Philips Hue light bulbs use the Zigbee protocol. So you can download Zigbee to MQTT, Home Assistant has ZHA, and you can just buy yourself a Zigbee radio. Home Assistant sells the Sky Connect for $29. We spoke about that top of the hour. You can pair them locally and completely avoid the Hue Hub. Raham, what are your thoughts on this whole shenanigans that's going on here?
Exactly the same as yours, right? I think it's backwards. I had the same rant when Belkin did the same thing with the Wemo series, right? When it used to be all local. Now they're like, hey, no, we're going to create it. You have to create an account. What really frustrates me is when they say, oh, it's for your security. Fine. If that's the case, and if you genuinely think that you creating a account with my information and so on and so forth and creating a reliance on cloud is for my security, then explain how, explain why. What are you doing in the back end that's making it more secure, or how is it currently that's insecure, right? Yep. And if your excuse is, oh, well, it's open to anybody to go in and connect to your Zigbee network and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm going to need a little bit more than that, right?
I mean, the chances are if someone can get onto a local network to then access your Hue Bridge to get to your Zigbee network, the problem isn't on the Hue Bridge, right? Like, the problem is somewhere else in the local network, either someone being physically to get on the local network to then access the Hue Bridge, or another device being exposed that can then pivot into that Hue Bridge.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, I don't see the reasoning. It again, especially when they give some kind of generic statement like, oh yeah, I know it's for your security. Okay, give me a reason behind that, right? Like how is you doing this actually going to improve my security posture? Don't just say it's for my security. I don't know. It's yeah, to me that it's very frustrating. And again, having seen that from a couple of organizations now doing this, I'm curious as to how people are going to or how that's going to affect future Philips Hue buying, right? Obviously Philips doesn't think that it's going to affect them enough that they would stop the release. But I think even Home Assistant's put out a statement around this, right? Just being like, hey, this is just really silly. And yeah, here it's on September 22nd they put it up.
Yeah, like, there's some good points in there. You know, I think I'm just raised, right, like, once, like, currently, like, and they've asked on Twitter, right, like, Philips, they said to Philips, hey, like, what data can you see right now and what changes afterwards? And Philips was like, okay, right now we can sort of see some data, but after this change we're going to get a lot more data. As per our privacy policy, which they updated in April 23. So, like, they're admitting, like, we're going to get more data from your home once you sign up for a cloud account. Currently, we can only see, you know, basic information like device ID belongs to this IP address. After this change, we're going to be able to see, okay, Rohan has this device and he turns it off and on at this time of day.
Yeah. Yeah, and in the tweets there, so I think Paulus wrote this blog article, and I mean, at least it has his name on it, but so I assume he did. He reached out to Philips Hue on Twitter, looks like, or X or whatever we call it this week. And it's like, you know, they basically did say, like, hey, if once they log in, we'll be sharing a lot more information with you. And they're like, yes, as mentioned in our policy, that so that is going to be the case. So you will be sharing a lot more of your private data with them. And their response effectively is, we're sorry you feel this way. As the features we develop grow, so does the need for more advanced security. To keep your accounts and products secure and ensure you get the most out of our system, you'll need to create a Philips Hue account soon. Again, like I said, it's for advanced security. What the heck does that mean? Right? Explain to me if you're going to take more of my data, where is the greater good here? Right? How is that better than my lights being insecure? Right? Effectively a private Zigbee network.
And this might be a lesson to other companies in not how to handle this rollout. And I think what's happening here is that, you know, Philips Hue are just on this path and people aren't responding. Like, there's a lot of, you know, critique coming at Cube on social media and that saying, hey, why do we need this? And they're just giving canned responses, right? Whereas we actually need some reasoning behind, right? This is the time for Philips to come out and say, hey, this is why we need to do it. And I suspect, I have no idea if this is true, but I suspect what's happening is, like, Philips have just announced a whole bunch of new devices coming into their Hue lineup. So you've got cameras, you've got smart door open-close sensors, right? Not your typical light bulbs. And, you know, for things like cloud record, maybe they're going to have, like, recordings of like cameras on the Hue bridge, right? And they want to be able to lock that down. You do need an account for that. That makes more sense. Like, if that is why, or if that is how things are being more secure, then Philips needs to come out and say, this is why it's more secure. Right now it's just, oh, it's more secure and this is our policy. Like, no.
And what are you doing to make sure my data is more secure on top of that?
Right? Yeah.
I don't know. And listen, open statement out there. If anybody from Signify who's behind Philips Hue is listening, we're happy to have you on the episode. If you want to, or on an episode, to come in and talk to us, and clear the air. I mean, I would love to be wrong here in this situation.
What's interesting, this isn't the first time Philips Hue sort of has had to back away from something. Not that they're backing away this time, but there was a few years ago, Philips Hue decided to start locking out third-party Zigbee lights from their Hue Hub. So if you weren't using an official Philips Hue bulb, you were not able to link it to your Philips Hue Hub. There was a bit of backlash from the home automation community regarding that, because, you know, Zigbee is supposed to be an open protocol, and Philips Hue was, you know, saying they support the light link protocol and was all of a sudden threatening to ban all other brands Zigbee compatible lights from their hub. So maybe this will be another opportunity for Philips to do a 11th hour course correction, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, and could be, right? I mean, they've done it in the past. Hopefully that's going to be the case. Again, like I saw with the Wemo ecosystem, that wasn't the case, right? They still insisted, whatever. However, the nice thing with the Wemo ecosystem is they required HomeKit support, so you could always add those things via HomeKit. And I guess Philips is the same. Hue technically is the same with Zigbee support, right? Since they do run Zigbee, you can just leverage a Zigbee radio. So if you don't want to do that, I mean, if you do see value in their cloud in creating an account and so on and so forth, then great. If you don't, then my suggestion would be get a Zigbee stick if you don't already have one and add those things locally to ZHA or Zigbee to MQTT or whatever you're using, and go from there. So
that's it.
And I know on we can leave a link to the blog post in that Home Assistant talked about Yeah, where they talk about this and where they give their opinion on it. They did say, you know, we encourage you to reach out to Signify support to voice your concern. So I think, you know, I would be the same. And if anybody gets a good answer as to why, like, hey, this is why we're actually doing this, please let us know. Right. Comment. Mm-hmm. If you're watching this on YouTube, just leave a comment on this, on the video, or if you're listening to us through an audio podcast, just email us feedback@haspodcast.io. I would love to know. Side rant: my MyQ has started acting up again, right? And it looks like it's not like just us.
It's like cloud issues again.
I despise this platform. So they changed some stuff on the cloud side. Basically,
were
now
you just saying you need like a user couple issue. Of episodes ago, like it's been solid.
Yeah.
It's because you said that.
I told you this would happen too. I knocked on wood and clearly that wasn't enough. but they made some changes on their cloud side. Again, in the past, we've kind of found it to be, divisive. What's the word I'm looking for? Like just they're trying to make sure you can't connect without one of their official things, right? Like if you want to add some of their, they've started charging for some of their integrations now, things like that. So if, for example, I saw if you have a Tesla vehicle and you want MyQ, there's a membership, like a monthly that you need to pay for it, right? I'm like, to open my garage door, really?
What? Is this what the world we're going to be heading to? Like where you want a button on your car's dashboard to open your garage door? It's a $2.99 subscription.
Honestly, I think it was more than that. I don't remember exactly what it is. I saw that and I was like, this is so stupid. I'm not like, this is like, it's actually enraging me. Right. But
just
fine.
Go
whatever.
On Amazon, get one of those like Miros HomeKit Wi-Fi controllers and call it a day. Like
it's, right. And the problem is, it's like, I get into this thing being like, okay, so I'm going to buy this, whatever. And then I'm like, oh, it's all good now, whatever. Right. So we don't need to. But effectively what's happened is, they changed some requirement for user agents. There's a fix online. It is part of the, there's a bug filed. So I do see that, being fixed. So it needs a Python MyQ 3.1.9 library specifically. And I don't know where this has been fixed or if it's going to be in 2023. God, what are we on? 10. But hopefully it is. I don't know, man. It just annoys me, right? Like it, again, I'm not saying they did this time on purpose or something like that. Might just be, again, to genuinely strengthen their security on their side, which fine, whatever. But again, going back to why I don't love cloud connected products sometimes is exactly that, right?
Yeah, that's it.
But that's
have you had
our two rants?
Have you had any automation wins this month? Any new automations that you've created that you're pleased about?
I'm trying to think. I don't actually think I had time this month to create any automations. I've just been running around. Yeah. I've been traveling for work and whatnot. So it's I'm trying to think. It was only a change that I made, and that was on the weekend. So for those that don't know, we typically record these sessions on the weekend. So what I did is my curtains that I talked about earlier that are on the switchbot tilts. They just didn't open on the weekend, and my wife was just getting annoyed. She'd be like, hey, the curtains aren't open again, so I just added those on the weekend. Other than that, I haven't really done anything. I'm going to be doing the, like I said, the IKEA Edison desk, BLE, Bluetooth proxy, whatever. I think I'm going to be doing that the next couple of days. And I don't know. That's... I'm okay though. I'm okay not constantly fiddling my, like, again, other than Philips Hue or not Philips Hue. Wow. Other than the MyQ, everything's just been, it's been okay. One of my most favorite things that I've been enjoying lately is, I mean, we talked about how we both got robot vacuums at some point, whatever, the smart ones, right? So my D-bot just saying, like, to my Amazon Echo, just saying, hey, vacuum the house. Yeah. And it goes off and vacuums the house, right? And that, nice. I've been using that one because I used to have it on a schedule, but then it was never like, it always go off, like either when I'm on a call or, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, my wife is watching TV and she's like, oh, this is loud, I don't want to hear it, blah, blah, blah. So now I just do it like arbitrarily when I'm like, hey, go vacuum the house or that kind of thing. I was going to do it for like when both of us leave and stuff like that. But honestly, this has been okay.
That's something I need to set up, voice control. Because right now, I haven't got to, like, running my, if my, we want to run like the vacuum, my wife will text me, like, if I'm not home, saying, hey, can you get the vacuum to come and mop this room, right? Because she doesn't have the app on her phone. So, yeah, just to be able to add voice control to that, that would be brilliant.
Yeah, well, and what brand did you get? Why can't I remember their name?
Roborock.
Right, the Roborock. So that's been getting a ton of love. Even this release, we didn't talk about it, but the Roborock actually got a bunch of updates and stuff too. So it's been... On the home assistant front, the Roborock is doing really well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's I don't know. It's nice to see that, right? But yeah, that's and it looks like MyQ didn't, at least as of the RC release on 2023.10, MyQ is still broken.
Put a follow bug in under beta.
It's in, it's closed, it's fixed. It's just a matter of when it'll get merged, right? So I'll wait it out, but
But so I had an automation win.
Yeah. Okay. I want to hear this.
So I have a Android phone with the Home Assistant app running, right? So I put it on my bed has a built-in like wireless charging pad. So that I could just put my phone inside on the nightstand and it charges, right? But it's really dinky, right? Like the phone has to be on at the exact right spot. And if it's not on that spot, it doesn't charge, right? And so when I get into bed, I will ever so slightly position it right onto that perfect one little spot and then get into bed. It inevitably moves at some point in the night. And the phone doesn't charge, right? Because it's fallen off the pad. So I have a Philips Hue. I have a Zigbee light in the room. What I've done now is that when my phone goes on charge, now the Home Assistant app will see it's on charge. It will go, okay, you're starting to charge. If after that point the phone gets removed from wireless charging and it's between, you know, sleeping hours, it will turn a light in the room on red so it doesn't wake anyone else up so that I can then see before I fall asleep, hey, why is there a light on in this room? I can then move my phone. As soon as it gets back on the charge, the light turns off and I know, okay, phone's charging. And that has saved me waking up in the morning to an empty phone battery.
Nice. Okay, that's kind of cool. I mean, it's hopefully that never fails and changes color and it's like bright white and it's just like at 3 in the morning, you're just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But that's funny.
And another one I've done, similar to like using Simulogic, I'm going into the office like variable days at the moment, so that dictates I need an alarm some mornings, some mornings I don't need an alarm, but the last thing I want is to go to bed and forgetting to check the alarm's actually been set. Because Home Assistant is now controlling that alarm through Sonos. So when I put my phone on that charging pad, it'll wait 5 seconds and then it will check my Sonos and say, hey, is there an alarm set fixed for 6 a.m. tomorrow? If there is, it'll just briefly turn that Zigbee light on for 5 seconds to a different color. I think it's purple, and then turn it off. So I know, okay, light just turned purple. That means the alarm's set. I can go to sleep and I'm going to get woken up in the morning.
Nice. That's cool.
So
I like that.
They're my little automation wins for the month.
That's cool. All right. I think that's 2023.10.
Done. Thank you as always.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.